love, courage, truth.
America has a really serious problem. And here it is. We don't even know who we are. Even worse, we don't even care. We don't even care that we don't know. Only 26% of Americans can name all three branches of our government. 26%. Now, this is a little depressing, but it has been brought to us by the annual Constitutional Day Civics Survey. According to the survey, more than one-third of Americans cannot name any of our First Amendment rights. Any, not one. There's five, by the way. They can't name one. Now, how is that even possible? In a nation where you have to go to school by law. We have less of an excuse than any previous generation of Americans for knowing, for not knowing the basic mechanics of our government. I mean, there was a time when you couldn't find this stuff. There was a time when, you know, you couldn't afford a book. You couldn't get to school. School wasn't mandated. Whatever the excuse was. But we have more tools and resources at the touch of a button than our ancestors could have ever dreamt of. And yet, they would be sad to know how little we know. It is pathetic. Pathetic that the generation with the most information is the least informed. Any population that doesn't know the basic functions of its own government, doesn't know its fundamental rights, is asking, is begging to be taken advantage of. Our Constitution is the longest running constitution in the world. 229 years and counting, but that doesn't make us invincible. This is an experiment. And it requires participation. It requires our attention. It requires care from us Americans. But we're not willing to give it, it seems. Although I think America needs a scolding, this isn't a scolding. This is a plea. Let's help each other learn the basics. Let's stop fighting about stupid statues. And please, let's fix this before it's too late for our children. The story goes that Benjamin Franklin walked out of the Constitutional Convention at the very end, and a woman came up and said, "Mr. Franklin, what sort of government have you given us?" He said, "A republic. If you can keep it."
It's Wednesday, September 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
How fragile is our union, our republic, our country? This is the reason why we're successful. There are several reasons. The reason why we're successful is that we're stable. We don't have revolutions. We don't have strife in the streets. That's rare. The West has provided that. Now, why is it different in the West? Well, it's different in the West because we rule ourselves under Judeo-Christian principles. But those are almost gone. You can't say Jesus anymore. You can't say I have a duty to God anymore. You're a crazy person. So if you remove those things, nature abhors a vacuum. What have we replaced it with? Well, nothing intentionally, but a whole buttload of stuff unintentionally. We now have the radical right and the radical left, and the media only wants to pay attention to the radical right. And the right media only wants to pay attention to the radical left. That leaves, I believe, about 80% of the population saying, "I don't want anything to do with any of these guys. I want nothing to do with these guys. I don't want revolution. I don't want to burn it down to the ground." If I hear that one more time from a so-called conservative, my head will explode. We just got to burn the whole thing down. Really? Really? Huh. That's interesting. How about we restore it? And the only way to restore it is if we all know our rights ourselves. We all know our responsibilities ourselves. That we restore first what the thing is in our own head. I read a story from the New York Times. They were asking, are we headed for a new civil war? Now, this was in the New Yorker, and I don't know, I think the Atlantic has done something on this. Are we headed for a new civil war? Now, remember, when I was warning about this 10 years ago, that was crazy talk. I said there will be an American spring, a European spring. That's, I believe, Brexit is the beginning of that. And then there will be an American spring. Now, I thought they were going to come a lot sooner than they have. But now, that was crazy talk. That was just trying to scare people into buying gold or whatever it is I'm always accused of doing. Now that the left is on it, now that there's a Republican in office, now it's time to talk about civil war. Please, can we get politics out of this? Please. Both sides are to blame. Keith Mines, he's a guy who was in U.S. Army Special Forces. He was at the State Department. He has seen civil wars. This was his job. Afghanistan, Colombia, El Salvador, Iraq, Somalia, Sudan. He came home and last March he said, what I'm seeing happening here is what happens all around the world. I can't believe what I have been studying and watching and helping hold hands through revolution and civil war all throughout the world is now coming home in my country. And he said he believes there's a 60% chance of civil war over the next 10 to 15 years. Other experts have said there's a 5% to 95% chance. So that's kind of a wide range there. This guy said the consensus was only 35% 5 months before Charlottesville. We keep saying that it can't happen here, but it will. It absolutely will. If you keep saying it can't happen here, yes, it can. You know why? Because humans are humans. If you missed yesterday's show, you missed a lot. And I don't know how many people heard the message in hour number two. But the message in hour number two was very, very clear. It came from Max Licato. And Max Licato has written a new book, and it's about chaos. And about anxiety that we have. We have more anxiety as people than any other group of people in the history of recorded anxiety. So as long as they've been measuring anxiety, we're at the top. We're number one. I don't want to be number one in that one. I don't know about you. I don't think we want to master that one. So where's that coming from? Where is this anxiety coming from? This anxiety is coming from, I'm worried about my job. I'm worried about my kids. I'm worried about the future. I'm worried about the loans that I have. I'm worried about the student loans. I'm worried about sending my kids to college because is it worth it? I'm worried about sending my kids to college because they'll be programmed into some sort of a Marxist anarchist. I don't know how to even talk to people because everything I might say, I might call them the wrong gender, and there's 93 genders and nobody's explained any of them to me. And I don't know what I can say to anybody without getting yelled at or called a bigot or a hate monger. That's why we're upset. And what is the media offering us? It's their fault. Both sides. That's it. And there's a lot of people who are like, well, I know it's not my fault. There's a lot of people who say, I've been warning about this for a long time. And so when your only option is it's their fault or their fault, what are you going to do? I'll tell you what you're going to do. What most people have done, and that is unplug. They're just like, I'm not paying attention to any of it anymore. That's what most people have done. Most people are not watching CNN and MSNBC and Fox News. That is a fraction of our population. They're not doing that. And yet they're feeling the anxiety as well. Because something's not right. Now, here is why civil war happens. Now, see if we hit any of these. These are the five things that have to happen for a country to be prepped for civil war. Number one, entrenched national polarization with no obvious meeting place for resolution. Well, I don't think we have that, do we? I mean, that sounds really clear. That's right where we are. Increasingly divisive press coverage and information flows. I think we got that one down. Weakened institutions, notably the Congress or Parliament and the judiciary branch. Think we have that. Congress, when the president said, by the way, this isn't the president's job, DACA needs to go back to Congress. Congress said, we don't want that job. Weakened institutions? Well, I don't know. It's got, what is it, a 6 or a 9% approval rating right now. Couldn't get any weaker. And they are doing it to themselves. They don't even want their own responsibility. The next one, a sellout or an abandonment of responsibility by political leadership. Well, I'm sorry, what was I just saying a minute ago? Oh, yeah, that's right. They don't want that. The legitimization of violence as in the way to either conduct discourse or solve disputes. How many people right now are telling you it's the only way? It's the only way. We're in a civil war and there's no other way. I mean, when are you going to pick up your gun? How much is enough? That's where we're at. These are the conditions that you need to have a civil war, and we have them all. And I'm telling you now, we're in a cold civil war. Right now, we are experiencing a cold civil war. So what's the way out? Which country has ever reversed this? What role do we play in our nation's future? And what is the shock of events, and how does that shape our tomorrow? Coming up. Is America headed for a new civil war? I just gave you the things that the conditions that have to happen for a civil war, according to experts, and we have all of them. But the choice is still us. We still have to make the choice to do it. Yale historian says, slavery tore apart the country over 15 years. It tore both political parties apart. It destroyed the Whig Party, which was replaced by the Republican Party, and divided the Democratic Party into northern and southern parts. So this Yale historian is now telling you the same thing that I told you 10 years ago. Watch for the Whig moment. Watch for that moment, that beat down in the well of the Senate. And watch for the moment when somebody in the political party says, enough is enough. Enough is enough. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know if anybody has the political courage to do that anymore. There's also something that you should be aware of. In the 1850s, there was something called the shock of events. Just gigantic events that happened that the country was not good at absorbing. That there was just these huge shocks, and it forced everybody to reposition themselves. And reposition themselves in ways they didn't see necessarily coming. The Fugitive Slave Act, the Dred Scott decision, the John Brown raid, the Mexican-American War. These things happen, and people found that they couldn't absorb them. They couldn't take that shock. And it actually started to pit people against each other. Now, how? The Fugitive Slave Act? The Dred Scott decision? How is that possible that you don't know what side you're on? Because while most people in the South were not for slavery, most people in the South were not slave owners. The vast majority were not slave owners. Had nothing to do with slavery. It had been positioned as a North versus South. They're coming after your rights. By whom? By politicians. By people who wanted power. By people who were making money off of the backs of slaves and did everything they could to convince you or to convince the South that they're coming after because they don't like you, because they want to see an end of our way of life. We're hearing that now. And it causes polarization, radical polarization. You're really? So you must be for the Nazis. Really? So then you're for the communists, anarchists of Antifa. No, I'm not for either of those. That's a false choice. And that's where most people are. And we have to remember that. That and this, published in 1867. The lessons of this Civil War should never depart from us. And it's this, that the American people have no exemption from the ordinary fate of humankind. It can happen here. If we sin, we will suffer for our sins like the empires that are tottering and the nations that have perished.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
They'll move on and no one will remember who they were. That is what Mike Ditka gave to the NFL players that are kneeling during the national anthem. Nobody's ever going to remember who you are.
There's always going to be some malcontents. So let them be malcontents. Let them do their thing. And they'll move on. Nobody will think about it. Nobody will remember who they were. The fact that they didn't stand for the national anthem, that's their own. You know, they have a right to do that. They have a right to do anything they want to do. I just disagree with it.
Okay, so far, I think Dick is right. Second year in a row, the NFL TV ratings are down. Thursday night season opener was a TV ratings disaster. It was down 12 points from last year. But that didn't stop the players in seven games, seven NFL teams from taking a knee on Sunday. So let's first of all call this exactly what it is. Fake activism. Oh my gosh, you're so brave. Oh, you're so brave. You're taking all of that money and you're playing a game. Oh, that's brave of you. And then you're going to kneel down. Oh, that's wonderful. Here's the thing. America is being ripped apart by self-serving attention seekers. And I mean that even in my own business. Well, see, say, me, perhaps. You can't tell what people are doing things for. You have no idea. Marshawn Lynch, running back for the Oakland Raiders, he sat during the anthem. He didn't bother to explain why he was doing it. So why was he doing it? And what is it people are protesting? Kaepernick started all of this in the NFL, and his case perfectly explains what this wave of phony activism really is all about. Attention. That's it. Attention. Everyone is doing it for their own benefit. It is fascinating to me that how Collins' activism suddenly appeared out of nowhere the moment he lost all relevancy. But he's brave. He's like the athletes of the 60s. No, no, he's not. He's not. When George Foreman was in his prime, it was during a period in our history when racial tension was actually at its highest, and we had a really good reason. Foreman was just asked about what he thought about Kaepernick and what was going on in the NFL.
You know, the shame part of it, all of us, including Joe Frazier, myself, and a few more, even to this day, we became the heavyweight champ of the world, and we actually thought we would turn into Muhammad Ali. We didn't realize just because you're a champion, you don't become Muhammad Ali. So a lot of us start doing things to get some attention so people would praise us or hate us or talk about us like they did Muhammad Ali. Some of us never got it. Now, the 60s started the trend. Today, there's nothing to say about anyone. And a lot of guys said, look, I got all this money, but nobody knows me. So let me say something like Muhammad Ali, and maybe I'll be different. And that's all that is.
You hear that from George Foreman? This doesn't have anything to do with a cause. This is all about marketing. This is all about being a product. This is all about attention. It's all about being relevant. All they want is relevance. Don't give it to them.
Hillary Rodham Clinton has spent the last 10 months trying to figure out why she isn't president of the United States.
That is Hillary Clinton. Her new book is coming out, and they have been on this tour of trying to figure out exactly why she lost. Okay, it's really not that hard. It's really not that hard. Can we? Again, it's about selling books. It's about being relevant. Hillary Clinton is not relevant. She's not.
She needs to start kneeling on an NFL field.
Yes.
Then maybe people will buy her book.
Helpful. What she's doing instead is she's writing a book and saying, here's all the things that I have. Here's all the things I've been up against. Well, we all have. Tell me, if I gave you 20 minutes of airtime, could you come up and fill those 20 minutes of airtime with all the things that you've been up against? Can you come up with 20 minutes of stuff that is like, man, I didn't make it because of X, Y, and Z? I know I could. I could. Does it matter? How is that relevant to anybody's life? Here's the deal. It didn't work. Okay. Move on. She is claiming to take responsibility, but here's Hillary Clinton on all of the things and the reasons why she's not president.
Hillary Rodham Clinton has spent the last 10 months trying to figure out why she isn't president of the United States.
I'm not going to step back from telling my truth. The idea of a woman president, white, authoritarian, that there was something that was personal toward me, the Russians weaponizing information, negative stories about me, this whole WikiLeaks of John Podesta's emails, they were taken out of context. We now know Facebook, voter suppression, feeds in, I think, to the whole sexism and misogyny. And the attacks were so sexist. A lot of the sexism and the misogyny, and then let's not forget sexism and misogyny. We really don't want a woman commander in chief. Nostalgia. Yeah, millions of white people. The forces that were at work, it was a perfect storm using personal email. Presented in such a negative way, I don't know quite what audience he was playing to. Right-wing commentators, right-wing members of Congress. But for that Comey letter, she would have won. So badly damaged because of that. Election. 11 days before the election, it just stopped my momentum. Help me make sense of that. There was anger and there was resentment. A lot of people didn't want to hear my plans. Trump was behaving in a deplorable manner. A large number of people who didn't care. Oh, but they were already energized. I don't buy that. Having him scowling and leering, it was so discombobulating. Back up, you creep. You know, maybe I missed a few chances. My share of Chardonnay. I wanted to tell what happened, and the primary was part of what happened. Won a landslide victory in the primary. I didn't get the same respect from my primary opponent. A lot of his supporters continue to harass. Well, you're supporting a woman because you're a woman. Yes, right. And they're still out there. And Bernie's not a Democrat. It's very hurtful. Enough.
Wow.
Enough is right.
Enough is exactly the way that should end. Enough.
That's amazing. From the Washington Free Beacon going through. That's one interview. All of those clips were from one interview. That wasn't every excuse she's ever made for losing. That was all the excuses she made in one interview for losing. It's amazing, too. And the sexism one is completely infuriating. Hillary Clinton, faced with the most important decision of her entire life, the person who would be number two in charge of the United States of America picked a dude named Tim.
Yeah, but
that is
but only she only picked that because she knew America couldn't handle two women.
That is basically, I mean, isn't that sexist? She could have picked a woman to that role. She had the ultimate power to select anyone she chose, and she chose a dude named Tim.
I can't take the excuses. I really can't. I just can't. And we all have to get to this point to where we're like, okay, you know, buck stops with me. Dude, didn't work. And I can tell you all the things that went into why it didn't work. But really, pretty much, they all kind of come back down to me. And I know because I'm doing this right now. I'm in my own company. Oh, Glenn Beck, he's whatever. Whatever. I can tell you a list of reasons. I can give you all kinds of stuff. But when it all comes down to it, me. It's me. I learned really early on in this business, and it's no different in politics. They're really rejecting you. They're really rejecting you. If you don't have something good to say, some difference of perspective, if you don't have something of real value and you're not likable, you're going to fail. If people think you're a fraud, you will fail. If you're not likable, you will fail. If you don't have something different and new, and something of real meaning, you will fail. Might take you a while, but you'll fail. It's taken Hillary Clinton a long time, but she failed. And she failed for several reasons. She was out of touch and out of step. It has nothing to do with whether she's wearing a pantsuit or a suit. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Her gender does not matter. She was out of step with the American people. She just felt like the 1990s. That's quite honestly, that is why almost everybody failed, except for Donald Trump. He reflected a new kind of attitude in America. You can hate it, but it's true. People were done with the same kind of politician that we always have. We had some really good politicians, really good. America didn't want them. America wanted something different, radically different. Hillary Clinton was the stodgiest of all of them up there. When you're presented with, hey, let's go relive the 1990s and have more of the same, America wasn't in for more of the same. That's just one reason. She just felt like more of the same. Second reason, she's not likable. She's just not likable. And I know people who are big fundraisers for Hillary Clinton. They've been on the... I know people who have worked for Hillary Clinton, who have long since passed that post of, she's just not likable. I mean, I might believe her, I might want her to be the president, but she's not a likable person because there's nothing real or authentic about her.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the definition. It's because she's not real. If you remember the Kate McKinnon take of her on Saturday Night Live, the impression of her was really accurate as to what her problem was.
Yes.
Her problem was she was constantly calculating, constantly trying to say whatever she had to say to bring a few more votes through that door. And it winds up being so inauthentic to the average person. They know, they can sense.
So here's the thing. Here's why Donald Trump could be much more ostentatious than Hillary Clinton and get away with it. Donald Trump comes flying in on his big jet that says Trump on the side. It's not the campaign's. It's his. He comes out with his gold-plated cufflinks and my luxurious whatever, fill in the blank. And people were willing to accept that from him because that is who he is. There is nothing disingenuous about him. He likes the gold-plated, Louis the 14th or whichever Louis it was, kind of furniture that he surrounds himself with. That's him. That is him. And people are willing to accept you as you. Hillary Clinton, everybody knows she's not driving around in a minivan and loves to go and, eat with the people at whatever. That's not her. Donald Trump eating McDonald's on his jet? That's him. That's him. He likes fast food and Louis the 14th furniture on his jumbo jet. That's Donald.
And people accepted Hillary's husband for the same stuff.
Exactly right.
They were fine with him jamming hamburgers down his throat as he was on.
Because it was real. It was real.
So he was.
Right. So when she goes on a listening tour and she's hanging out with the folk, at the fairs, which I love county fairs. No, you don't. No, you don't. And it's okay that you don't.
A lot of people don't.
There's
a lot of weird smells at them, right. I'll be honest about it.
I happen to like the state fairs. I like that kind of stuff, but I grew up with it. And if that makes me a freak, great, it makes me a freak. It makes her a freak, good, it makes her a freak. If she doesn't like them, doesn't matter.
There is that point, however, when you cross over from smells from fried foods to manure and back. That borderline, that line of demarcation is not positive.
Yeah, I don't think we do need
it. It's not a positive
smell. That's
not
really where we're, going unless you're just talking about the stuff that has to be shoveled up after the politicians leave. It's amazing how the hurricane relief that Hollywood did raised $44 million. As you know, a football player raised $20 million. We've raised, $3 million just on this one show, just with us and you, $3 million. Hollywood has the networks, they have all of the stars, and they only raise $44 million? Why? Answer is really simple. They made it political. They didn't make it about service. They made it about politics.